Welcome back to Cloak and Dagger. I'm your host, Lenny Bloom, along with my co-host, the great American Judge Buster from Chicago, Sherman Skolnick, and we're welcoming back, after a long way away, Barry Chamish, our resident expert on happenings in Israel. Barry, welcome back to Cloak and Dagger.
Thanks for having me.
It's an honor to have you here with your treasury of wisdom and understanding and of events, geopolitics, etc. It's great having you. And Sherman, take it away.
I've read your books, Barry, and they're really good.
Thank you. You read the new one?
I gather there's a few in Israel and not too happy with you. For new listeners, Barry, tell us a little bit about your background.
Quickly, I got a lot of attention for successfully exposing the conspiracy to murder Yitzhak Rabin and convincing a majority of my countrymen that the government lied to them, that the kids sitting in prison didn't do the shooting, and that, in fact, Rabin's murder was organized by Shimon Peres.
What's happening with that, briefly?
Well, nothing's ever going to happen with that, because Shimon Peres is deputy prime minister of the country, and should Sharon have a sudden heart attack or trip down some steps, we're going to be stuck with him as prime minister.
Am I correct or incorrect? Peres is wanted to be questioned in the United States on certain problems?
If it was that, and I'm not even, you know, I don't know what you're talking about, and I remember exactly what you're talking about. There was something about that. But again, he should be tried for murder, the murder of Yitzhak Rabin in Israel. And as for Peres' career of infamy and genocide, I mean, really, we're talking about he organized the murder of thousands of his own people.
Anyway, you're on a speaking tour in Canada. It's time we're talking to you. Tell us a little bit about the subject that's...
The secret war against the settlers. That's Peres. That, certainly part of it is Peres, okay?
Most of the settlers are Americans, aren't they?
I'd say maybe 2%.
Only 2%, okay.
Well, anyway, fill us in with what you feel the listeners would find interesting.
Well, I've been telling audience after audience, and as usual, proving to audience after audience, that the plan for the removal of the settlers began at the beginning of Oslo. I interviewed the architect of Oslo, one of the two negotiators, that is Ron Pundak, and he thought I was real sympathetic to him. This was back in January of '94. And he told me outright, he says, the ultimate goal of Oslo is the removal of Israel's borders. And I said to him, well, what do you talk, you know, what does that mean? And little by little, he told me that his boss, Yossi Beilin, doesn't believe in borders, that borders cause war. And the ultimate goal, you're going to have a Middle East without borders. You're going to have a Middle East just like the EU. And... Israel will be literally the New Jersey Turnpike, where traffic from Morocco to Iran passes through our gas stations and stays at our motels. They're planning, just so you know, by the way, I'll mention other proofs I have, but they're planning to break up the nations of the Middle East by hook or crook and create a block of nations, and Israel goes, but the strange irony is that the Iraqi insurgents and the settlers of Gush Katif are fighting the exact same enemy, precisely the exact same enemy. It would actually be a key to Jewish-Arab understanding if the other side, the Arabs, finally understood that Israel is getting dismembered just the way Iraq is.
Barry, I'd like to ask a historical question for the benefit of the listeners. Some of us understand the situation as follows. If you don't agree, I hope you'll speak up and tell us your viewpoint.
Yeah.
But some of us believe that the British, in order to control the oil fields, in a way induced Jews to move into what they feel was their historical homeland. And the purpose from the British standpoint was to have Israel there to irritate the surrounding Arabs practically forever. Because
I don't know what happened.
Huh?
That's not what happened.
Well, okay.
That's so far-fetched.
Well, let me just finish, and then if you disagree, I want to hear your viewpoint. And the idea is that the Jews would be surrounded by their religious enemies, and that would go on forever without peace or an answer or a remedy for the benefit of the British controlling the oil field.
Yeah, a divide-and-conquer approach.
You don't feel that that's a valid explanation?
Understand, they've got the oil fields, whether there's an Israel or not. The fact of the matter is they've got an entire army roaming around the Middle East controlling oil fields. And at the same time, Israel's being dismembered. So it doesn't work. The thesis doesn't work. Israel is not going to survive. And by the way, either will Syria and either will Lebanon. You're talking about them creating a very different Middle East, Israel or not. Now, I don't know.
So what new
really
countries
believe.
Were they? What are they going to, what new, have you got any idea of what's new?
Yeah, look at the EU, and that's the Middle East.
The United States.
Spreading democracy is a front.
Right.
They're not trying to spread democracy. Arabs don't like democracy. It's not something they enjoy. Okay, you don't shove it down their throats and think that, look, the front is always so nice. The excuse is always so nice. But behind it is a very, very different and ugly reality, and including a whole lot of people getting killed. The fact of the matter is, there was a bombing in Lebanon 3 weeks ago, in which Rafiq Hariri was murdered. And you got to be out of your mind if you think the Syrians did it. This is your classic CIA with local cells bombing. If Syria wanted to murder Hariri, they would get a sniper and not blow up the entire hotel district of Beirut. That's how they started the civil war in 1975. And then immediately, of course, comes the blame. Immediately. It didn't take 3 seconds before they could have possibly known who did the bombing, Syria did the bombing. Now, what worries me is that in Israel, 5 days later, we had a terror bombing at a nightclub. And our government, within seconds, blamed Syria. And I assure you, I spoke to a policeman yesterday in Los Angeles, an Israeli policeman who heard my lecture. He told me outright the police knew 2 hours before that this terrorist got in. He was let in. And what worries me even more than that, the deal was probably, we don't want him blowing up 27 Jewish teenagers at a disco this time around. He has to come a little early. He came a half an hour before the doors opened, and there were only four or five killed instead of 16 or 19 or 22. The fact of the matter is that terror is used all the time to promote this new diplomacy. And they have decided that Syria has now got to go and Lebanon's got to go. The whole Middle East will no longer have its old borders. But keep this in mind. Israel is getting just as shafted. Israel's getting more shafted. Now, if you really believe that 8,000 acres of hothouses in Gush Katif, in Jewish Gaza, is going to bring peace and security to the region, nobody believes that. Nobody believes that withdrawing from 10% of Gaza is something that would bring security. If anyone wanted peace in the Middle East, really wanted it, the Gaza Strip would be extended into the Sinai Peninsula, which is empty, which has 36,000 square miles of land, and when we had it, it was flourishing. But peace is not what's going on. That's not the idea of all this. The idea, number one, for Israel is extremely excruciating, that our founders are going to dismember the state because it did not turn into their vision. Oh, this gets complicated. Oh, I have a new book. It's called Shabtai Tzvi, Labor Zionism and the Holocaust. The thesis is that the early Zionists were followers of a false messiah named Shabtai Tzvi, and their idea was to create an Israel in the image of anti-Judaism. They did not want Israel to be religious. They wanted Israel to be utterly immoral. And that was labor Zionism. But the Jews in the West Bank and in Gaza fought back and created a flourishing Torah-based community. And these, I call them Sabbateans, there are reasons for that. These labor Zionists would rather see the state die than the Israel that they claim they created turn into an actual moral Torah-based state. And they'll kill these people off. In about 2 months, there's going to be a confrontation. I assure you, Sharon will shoot to kill. Shoot to kill. And my lecture, The Dirty War Against the Settlers, is an awful history of how they murdered the rabbis of Yeshua. They murdered 20 or more rabbis of the settlers in ambushes to delegitimize them. They have been murdering politicians. They have used every dirty black op technique in the book.
Who's they?
All right, do you want to start the real background?
Yeah.
Number one, this is a policy of what you will call the Council on Foreign Relations. Every member right now of the disengagement team is CFR. It is Condoleezza Rice, CFR. It is James Baker, CFR. Edward D.J. DeGeorgian, CFR. Norman Olson, Deputy Ambassador to Tel Aviv, CFR. The entire disengagement, the so-called peace process, is now thoroughly in the hands of the CFR, but it gets worse. It gets really, really bad. The CFR have taken over the Bank of Israel. Stanley Fisher is our new head of the CFR. The CFR's Bronfman's just bought the third largest bank in Israel. The CFR's Ronald Lauder is buying up the religious and right-wing and conservative media, so there will be no alternative voices when they get through with it. The CFR is buying Israel thoroughly, and I can promise you, when Israel goes, these people will be in charge of the property that's going to be sold back to the World Bank. And that's why Paul Wolfowitz, that's a primary reason why Paul Wolfowitz is now going to be head of the World Bank. He's going to start with putting the putting on the auction block Gush Katif.
But Barry, what about...
Speak up, Sherman. Speak up.
What about those who publish documented studies that the Council on Foreign Relations is just another front for the Jesuits who want to insert the Pope? Remember, the Pope does not believe in republics, in the consent of the governed. He says he's there by divine right. And in years past, popes in the Vatican have said that the U.S. Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights are unholy and savage and so on, because they don't believe in it. They want the Pope to occupy Jerusalem and to clean off the power of both the Arabs and the Jews.
Look,
do you accept that type of explanation?
Only partially. Now, there are certainly two camps in this world. There's certainly, I mean, you can just say, if you want to, EU, United States, if you want to simplify, but it's not so simple. There are two camps. Both of them agree Israel's got to go, that's for sure. The only thing they fight over is who gets what from the rubble. The European camp is certainly led by the Jesuit Vatican, but the CFR has got a point that you should look at, and that is the Sabbatean side. The Sabbatean side is what you might call the neocons, where Jews who are not Jews, they are anti-Jews. They despise religion. There may be 10,000 of these Sabbateans, but 14 million Jews are going to be blamed for their activities, as usual. You have to look at the CFR and what they say you have to believe them. They do exactly what they say they're going to do. So you take them at their word. Israel's demise has been planned by the CFR.
The CFR has always been a branch, merely a satellite branch of the Royal Institute of International Affairs, Chatham House.
Britain and the United States are both in Iraq, working hand in hand. We know that. There's no question about that. Call it the Anglo-Saxon branch. If you want to call it the Anglo-Saxon branch, go ahead. Versus the Catholic European Bilderberg branch. Okay, fine. That's the war. But the CFR right now is rising much faster than the Bilderberg European. They're doing what they want in the Middle East.
And what's happening with King Juan Carlos, the Prince of Jerusalem?
Oh, my. Perez met him 2 days ago. You didn't see that?
No, I missed it.
Perez flew to Spain. Look, here's how the division of labor goes in Israel. Owned by the CFR are Sharon, Netanyahu, Barak, Rabin certainly was owned by Kissinger. Owned by the Vatican and Jesuits, that's Shimon Peres and Yossi Beilin. Okay, we know who our spies are and who they're spying for. It took a little while to sort it out, but again, I haven't plugged it enough, I suppose, but I do have a new book that does sort it out.
Yeah, let's go into your book. Give us the book and how and the ordering information, and then we'll get back to your briefing.
Subtitles: Free Labor Zionism and the Holocaust. And I make some claims that are going to make me extremely unpopular amongst 1% of Jews. I don't know. I know this much. Labor Zionism was the Sabbatean movement. It was a massive mistake. A massive mistake for the Jewish people. A disaster. And I prove it. However, just look at the Middle East. Israel may be artificial, but every place is artificial. Before 1917, there was no Saudi Arabia, there was no Jordan, there was no Kuwait, there was no Gulf States, there was no Lebanon. They were all Turkish vilayets. The British Freemasons redrew the map of the Middle East, and Israel is no more or less artificial than the rest of the places, including the Palestinians who don't exist. Never existed. It's nonsense there were ever Palestinians. So you have to look at the fact that we were all set up, all of us. Every one of us was set up. Equally set up, I must add. And this is my concept, that once the Arabs understand we've all been framed, maybe we can sit down and unframe ourselves. The book, well, I'm going to be back in America, in Israel in 5 days. So here's my email address. Chamish, Chamish, at netvision.il, chamish@netvision.net.il. Look at my website, www.barrychamish.com, barrychamish.com. You can order through there. Now, I'm in Toronto this Sunday night at the Toronto Zionist Center, 788 Marley. You have Toronto listeners, right?
Absolutely.
All right, then, 788 Marley. I am at Lawrence on Sunday night at 8 o'clock. The name of the speech is the Dirty War Against the Settlers. What I prove case by case is to get these settlers out of their homes. They have, and we know who the they is, but let's just say the Israeli government. Okay? The Israeli government, it more like a hit squad for peace, has been murdering the religious leaders, the rabbis, the political leaders. Anyone who stands in the way of this Oslo gets murdered. You know, in Israel today, the only the left wing of the country, the pro-Oslo people, they don't have suicides, and they don't have accidents, and they don't get sick. only if you endanger this Oslo process, do you suddenly get instant cancer, have a desire to kill yourself, or fall down cliffs? And the numbers are astounding. The number of Jews killed by Sabbatean Jews is astounding right now.
Well, then they blame it onto the Arabs?
they use Arabs as hitmen. Yes, they're working hand in hand with the Arabs, the peacemakers, and the Arabs, of course, may actually pull the triggers, but that's not important. What's important is who gives the information, who gives the intelligence, and that's all coming from our side.
Tell me something. You've written extensively about the murder of Yitzhak Rabin by the what the Americans would call the
peacemakers.
The Israel FBI or the Israel Secret Service.
Oh, the Shabak.
If Yitzhak Rabin would have lived, would it have been that much different?
Yeah, it would have been much better. He was killed because he would no longer go along with this Oslo nonsense. Rabin saw that he was taken for a ride, put an end to it, told Dennis Ross, Martin Indyk, Warren Christopher, told them all to take a hike. He wasn't going on with his suicide anymore. Within 2 weeks, he was dead.
The Lee Harvey Oswald that was blamed is laying in jail someplace. Is that it?
Lee Harvey. Oh, you mean here?
He means it figuratively.
Do you know, 2 years ago, I got, 2.5 years ago, I got the actual police interrogation of Yigal Amir.
Yeah.
And I have given it to 4 different TV shows in Israel. 2 of them deliberately lost it. In one case, I had to get the police to recover it for me. This video, he doesn't confess to the police. He describes the whole murder accurately, down to the fake bullets, to Avishai Raviv, the name is of a provocateur, infamous in Israel, but he also tells the police there was a government plot leading to Shimon Peres. Yigal Amir said that to the police. How's that, huh?
What's the problem?
I have the tape.
The press in Israel is like the United States. They're fakers.
Oh, no. The press in Israel is much worse. I'm talking to you. Okay? I have gone throughout the United States, largely because of radio shows like you. In Israel, I'm down to a Rut Sheva Tamar Yonah show as my only regular show. Everything's shut down. And on top of that, they have simply terrified the alternative voices. Those who were getting a little too pesky aren't writing anymore. It's finished. Look, this is my speech. It's the brainwashing of a whole people, of turning a whole people into sheep. They will not fight back. It's finished. The settlers simply are divided. There's spies everywhere. There's infiltrators in every organization. They know what they're doing, these guys. I happen to think they're stupid as hell. I think they're transparent, translucent. I think you can see through every word of theirs. But the Jewish people, I do believe, are unusually stupid, and they fell for it.
You know, it may be off the track, Barry, but a few friends of mine that were Auschwitz survivors, they claim, whether true or not, that there was such anarchy at the beginning of the Second World War that the Jews and the shtetls and the small communities in Poland could have walked away in the direction of Palestine. It wasn't that far on the map.
British had closed it in
1939. Yeah, that's an argument against them. The point is, by the way, you know, one of the problems with the media in the United States is, number one, the right wing claims that the Jews own the media, whereas they're only managers and front men of the media. The Jews do not own the media in the United States. But the few that are heard were, with their families, collaborators with Hitler, such as Ted Koppel. I know maybe you like him. He smiles a lot.
I don't like him. I think his daughter
quit. You ought to look up his family's company, Orenstein and Koppel, and how they survived with Hitler, as a major company 6 months into the war. And then they fled Germany, and Koppel in February 40 was born in Lancaster, England. From there, his father was put on the Isle of Man as a collaborator. They ended up in Canada, and now he, for many years, headed this so-called popular show on ABC Network.
There's a few names I would look up. George Soros is one of them as well.
What about Maurice Strong? What do you hear about him?
He is, without a doubt, the only Canadian of influence in history.
By the way, the owner of one of your major newspapers there, if I don't pronounce it good, you'll correct me, Haaretz. A few years ago, I read that he was arrested, accused of a plot against other newspaper owners.
Well, actually, no, it was Mareev.
Mareev, yeah, that's right.
Okay, that's what they do. Look, that stuff to me is minor.
Yeah.
What's major is we're looking at the exact same pattern as 1938 in every respect. You got a wall surrounding Israel, and you actually have people thinking it's to keep Arabs out. That wall is to keep Jews in. You've got the exact ghetto. They're making the country smaller and smaller, and they're making the wall tighter and tighter, and we're being corralled more and more. You got the exact same scenario.
Right.
You got the Jewish leadership of the United States saboteeing thoroughly. They're all CFR. You name a major Jewish organization. It doesn't matter if it's the World Jewish Congress or the Bronfmans. It doesn't matter if it's Henry Siegman's American Jewish Congress. It doesn't matter if it's Mort Zuckerman of presidents of who knows what conferences. Matthew Henlon. Every one of them are CFR. Every single major Jewish organization is run by the CFR.
By the way, isn't one of the problems of Israel that the Jews don't multiply by childbirths, whereas the Arabs are very prolific? And
we can overcome that.
They have six children before an Israel couple has one.
We can overcome that if we were allowed to survive. That's not even the issue. The issue is, a decision was made that Israel was a mistake. It didn't work out the way we wanted it to, and they're dismembering the state. Now, if you look at this so-called, what a word, disengagement. What a stupid word. This is a surrender. This is a withdrawal. But now you have to look what they're doing. The Lebanon withdrawal, which was, I won't do how they did it. They did it through murder as usual, but you now have Hezbollah's got 18,000 missiles, all aimed at northern Israel. Haifa will be rubble in the morning the minute the buttons are pushed. Now, with the latest withdrawal, there are four northern Shomron settlements on high hills that protected the coastal road opposite Netanya. They're gone. With Gush Katif gone, you've got the southeastern road, Ashkelon, Ashdod, all open to even sniping. Even plain, ordinary sniping. You've now got a pincer grasp from the north at Lebanon to the Shomron settlements, cutting the coastal highway at Netanya, and Gush Katif gone, the entire southeastern coast of Israel, every one of them now are within easy musket shots of the enemy. We are not going to be viable. The state won't be viable very soon.
Let me ask a bad question, Barry.
Yeah.
Are you one of those, I don't want to call you an alarmist, but you're blowing the bugle that the Jews should get the hell out? Well, what are you saying?
Get the hell out. We have a last chance to save the country. Look, the settlers of Gush Katif are fighting the New World Order, and they don't realize it. If they can win, the whole world should get on their knees and thank him. Now, I've got a little problem with Iraq in that they murder their own people. They blow up whoever they feel like it. But the insurgents are still fighting the same battle. The tactics are very different. Gush Katif settlers don't kill, and the Iraqi insurgents kill their own people. Nonetheless, the enemy is the same, and this is not a simple thing for most people to understand. But I interviewed Ron Pundak, but afterwards I interviewed numerous other people who confirmed that the ultimate goal of the peace process, the ultimate goal of the neocons, and by the way, the ultimate goal of 9/11, okay, that's not for me to talk about. Let the experts talk about it. The Middle East is going to be one happy little block from Morocco to Iran, without borders and under control of the CFR. And it will join with the EU someday, and the EU will join with NAFTA someday, and that's their plan. They're blocking off the world. They're not interested in little nations. Israel is going to be part of a bloc and not
subsumed.
A sovereign nation. Now, if you read Shimon Peres' book, The New Middle East, he says it. His very words are, in the near future, Israel will not have borders. Instead, there will be a one-world government. Peres uses those words. And when a Shimon Peres says that hotels are better protection than army bases, you better listen to him, because that's what he, in his demented, twisted mind, is planning for us. He is the Vatican's agent in Israel, Shimon Peres. And he's got someone named Ophir Pinas. When Peres dies, the leadership of the Labor Party will follow his line. He placed his proteges in power. They're at the top.
But in other words, in your scenario, you don't place the Jesuits as the manipulators.
Absolutely, that's Peres.
Yeah, he's saying that's Peres.
I most certainly place them as the manipulators.
They're all popish persons, Sherman.
So you recognize that the Pope is angling to take over Jerusalem, push out the Arabs, push out the Jews, and have the Pope occupy Jerusalem.
That is
the center of the world.
That is the goal of Shimon Peres and Yossi Beilin. That's their functions. But they're opposed. You have the Anglo-Saxons with Sharon as their puppet, and he has been their puppet since 1974. That's also in my lecture and in my new book. They are opposing, you could call it America EU. Again, you can simplify it. But you're right. But the CFR, I assure you, has got another side to it, the Sabbatean side. And they are opposing the Jesuits. The Jesuits have betrayed, oh boy, I'm going to do this, and now we're going to go deep. In 1785 in Frankfurt, Germany, there was an incredibly fateful meeting at the home of Mayor Anschel Rothschild. He brought together two gentlemen. One was Adam Weishaupt, the other was Jacob Frank. Jacob Frank was the head of the Sabbateans in Europe at the time. A deal was cut. The Jesuits' ultimate goal, at that time anyways, was the end of the Protestant Reformation. To do so, they were going to disrupt a Protestant society, cause wars against them, anything they could. The Sabbateans' goal was the end of Jewish society and turning it into an anti-Jewish, sinful, non-religion, satanic, and using the same tactics, disrupting Jewish society the exact same way, demoralizing them through movements the reform movement in America was certainly Sabbatean as an example, but so was communism. And they worked together. The Jesuits pitched in, the Sabbateans pitched in, the Rothschilds got rich. That, to me, was the turning point in 1785 when the Sabbateans and the Jesuits, the Jesuit Illuminati, that is,
right,
met in Frankfurt. Now, we know afterwards that the Illuminati had to break up in Europe. They were discovered, first Bavaria, then Portugal, and they made a policy decision to infiltrate British Freemasonry. and turn it into their edicts and tenets. We know that's how they did it. But don't underestimate these Sabbateans. That's where Rothschild comes in. He's been backing them since that fateful meeting. And he didn't do it for ideology. He saw it as a great way to make a fortune. Did I explain that well?
Very good.
All right.
Are you there, Sherman?
Yeah, I'm listening.
That's my book, Sheptite C, Labor Zionism and the Holocaust. And the Holocaust was no joke. Labor Zionism, oh boy, I'm going to say something that Jews do not like to hear. All I can say to you is there are numerous books. Start with the transfer agreement by Edwin Black.
And perfidy.
The labor Zionists were working with the Nazis to create their state in Palestine. This is thoroughly documented. There was another form of Zionism, one that I relate to, founded by Zev Jabotinsky, that were trying to neutralize these monsters. They failed. And we're going to fail again, I'm afraid. I'm afraid it's 1938 again.
Barry, you do recognize, maybe you've studied the period, maybe you haven't. I have studied it. I'm older. The collaborators ended up in England. From England, they went to Canada, and they're here in the United States. And they are the ones that were the chief rabbis in the shtetls. They told the people, the Germans need you on the farm, get on the train. And you know where they went.
I'm very worried about the rabbis. You know, when I speak to Christian groups, and in this tour I've done the American Freedom Network in Denver. A nice crowd of a couple hundred came out, and I did a Christian group called Messengers of Messiah in Highland, California. But the point is, their preachers have been telling them the truth, and our rabbis haven't. I have a much, much tougher time dealing with rabbis.
So what I'm getting at, Barry...
Hold on.
Rabbis were the same as the community bankers. They had the gelt, the gold, and they came here with the gold, and their grandchildren, such as in Chicago, are big in real estate. Where did they get the money from? They stole the money from the people in the smaller communities and in the bigger communities in Poland, and they told the people falsely, get on the train, they need you to work on the farm, and you know where they went.
Okay, that's one episode.
That's the hardest thing to discuss.
The hardest thing is labor Zionism. The hardest thing is that the labor Zionists, under Chaim Weizmann, may he rot in hell, cut deals with the Nazis. The Nazis released their Jews. In 1932, there were 400 organizations in Germany representing Jews. In 1934, there was only one, Labor Zionism. A deal was cut to get as many German Jews to Palestine as possible. And from the Labor Zionist side, all their assets would be used to buy German goods. It's called the transfer agreement. Some terrible, terrible deals were made to save the Jews they wanted to and turn them into Sabbateans. I admit this is not an easy argument, but my sources are impeccable. I started with Rabbi Marvin Antelman, who wrote the book in 1974. It's called To Eliminate the Opiate.
Yeah, I know. I read it.
All right. Well, he...
Tell me this, Barry. In your talks, in your travels, do you see fit to discuss the Royal Court Jews, the Hofjuden, the ones that occupy Hollywood, and they only show you one side of the Holocaust question?
No.
They don't show the side that U.S. and England built up Hitler as a bulwark against Stalin.
No, I'm very, very careful. Now, if you want to know anyone who has fought media ignorance more than me, I don't know who he is. The Rabin story itself should have been a movie 8 times now, but somebody always interferes. Always. Every time. I've had backers, I've had producers, every time. I'm a victim of this cover-up to no end.
Barry, do you recognize that the Hollywood crowd, the fake Jews, they're fake. Some of them are not even Jews. They're Austrians.
Yeah.
They keep showing the same Holocaust. They don't show the Christian Holocaust at the hands of Joseph Stalin and things like that. And so a lot of Christians are very aggravated by that because it's a one-sided thing. And
I am aggravated less so. We lost a third of our people. The point is, Hitler was the tool, that's for sure. I recognize that the tool cost a lot of money, and the money came from... Look, you know about Prescott Bush and Harriman and all that. Everybody knows about that. I've got the Jewish agency in Jerusalem cutting deals to prop up the Nazi regime that are absolutely heartbreaking for a Jew to recognize.
Let me ask a bad question, Barry.
Yeah.
You are set to tell the truth.
I try not to lie, yeah.
Fancy wealthy Jews tried to get you arrested falsely.
Look, Israel, I think, made a mistake with me in that they underestimated how far the Rabin thing would go. They didn't think, they thought they could smear me, turn me into a crackpot and it would be over. But I hung in there. And now I'm very well known in Israel. More than I think you know. In Israel...
I'm trying to
say that if they do it, I think some people will see through it.
Barry, I look with a light in the dark corners. Here in Chicago, the wealthy Jews, I don't know what they believe in, okay? They have so much gold in their synagogue. I don't know. They worship the golden calf. They have, over the years, several times tried to falsely arrest me simply for telling the truth.
I have my...
It's very disturbing to me.
I have my stories. I've got my stories. Well, you didn't have the brakes in your car cut off in the middle of a highway, your back tire fold in, and your handbrakes removed, all in the same operation.
Yeah.
Okay, no, I've had my moments. And I expect they're going to smear me to death. I wait for it any day.
Your dear friend Joel Bainerman has had his struggles as well.
Joel Bainerman exposed the Bush family before anyone else.
Right, and he had a chapter in his book about me. He's a very brave writer. I spent several hours before he was to take an airplane and from Chicago. It seems like the very wealthy Jews got along good with Hitler, and if there's another Hitler in America named Bush, they would get along. They get along good with him.
They,
am I wrong to say that?
They are. First of all, Joel was the very first to introduce me to deeper concepts. So, of course, I'm very grateful to him. Joel paid mightily for confronting Bush. He got very, very sick afterwards. I don't know if you know the story.
Yes, I do. You told me.
Okay, he got very, very sick afterwards. And he's not the same anymore. Just, the fight is out of him. The mind is still active, but the fight is out of him.
Are the very wealthy Jews in Israel opponents to you?
Oh, no. Are you joking? Look, first of all, I'll bet you didn't know this. Do you know that a little over 30% of Israeli children are malnourished?
Really?
Uganda is only 26%. There are things going on in Israel. Nothing is being reported here. I've been here a week looking at the river. It's amazing. That's not Israel. It's some other country. I've been looking at how you must be looking at it from this country. Whatever they call Israel doesn't exist in your media. 30%, they are starving, the Israeli people. 30% of our children haven't got a jam sandwich when they go to school.
Why? Because there's great unemployment, huh?
It's not out of, it's utter starvation of our children right now. It's not just merely unemployment. This is poverty at a fourth world level. Israel is being wrecked. The place is being wrecked. And then this, look, the economy, why do you think Stanley Fisher is now going to be the central bank's commissioner? Okay, who needs him? Who imports? What country imports a central bank commissioner from somewhere else? The CFR are buying the properties of Israel. And that's no joke. 2 weeks ago it was Bank Discount. Third largest bank went to the Bronfmans, who also owned the biggest industrial corporation, Coor. The papers are being bought. Israel is not just merely a puppet state right now. The World Bank and the IMF are getting ready to divest the country, to sell its properties. And these people are buying them up now because they're about to be sold. Didn't know that, did you?
Tell me something, Barry. Do you find it of any interest, whatever, to talk to a dissident named Vanunu?
Oh, he was a little schmendrick nothing. They saw this. He was set up like Yigal Amir. And by the way, I'll tell you more than a few names who have told me. Peter Hunem, Peter Hunem was at my home maybe five times in Israel. And there was in Toronto, Stern, who did a documentary. Whatever, both of them agree that they found an idiot. They isolated the idiot. They wanted the Arabs to know that we've got these weapons. They used the idiot to get the news out the way they wanted it to. It was to their benefit. Please, he's no hero. He's a dummy.
Well, I disagree.
Why do you say that? Fill in the missing. Is he not a scientist?
He was a disturbed kid. He was isolated. Then he was fired briefly. Okay? Then they brought him back briefly. He was used from day one.
He talked well, though. Well, no, he had him on our program for an hour, and...
Barry, you're saying...
No, he doesn't. If he wasn't just another Yigal Amir, I would just say he's a traitor. Outright. But he was used, and he's too dumb to realize it.
Well, you're saying that they wanted the Dimona thing.
Yes.
They wanted that leaked, and they used
it.
Okay.
And that's how they do it.
Yeah.
And again, never take anything at face value, what's going on. There has not been a true word spoken by the Israeli media, maybe ever. And I'm, of course, trying for the first time to sort through this mess, and apparently a whole bunch of people are glad that I'm doing it. Okay, this little tour of mine has attracted good crowds.
Coming to the end of the segment,
yes.
Barry, repeat the name of your book, your website, slowly.
www.barrychamish.com. BarryChamish.com for anyone who speaks Hebrew. That's BarryChamish.com. Okay, I'm at the Toronto Zionist Center, 788 Marley at Lawrence, this Sunday, March 27th, 8 p.m. Bring your friends. I'm going to tell you the secret war, the ugly reign of terror against the settlers to make them abandon their homes. And guess what? Watch out, in 2 months or less, maybe even a few weeks, you're going to see the possibility of Jews tearing babies from their mother's arms and the mothers sent to camps right in Israel.
What about your book?
Oh, Shabtai.
Is there an 800 number you can give for people?
No, it's through the website.
Oh, it's through the website. Good.
Or
okay.
Through my address. The new one, of course, I've got a whole bunch of them. The new one, Shabtai, Labor Zionism and the Holocaust, wait 5 days till I get back to Israel, and then write Chamish, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, at NetVision, one word, N-E-T-V-I-S-I-O-N.net, N-E-T.I-L. We'll get it to you. Chamish at netvision.net.il. And anyone come to Marley Street, of course, I brought the books.
We're honored to have you on this program, Barry.
Oh, my honor, I assure you.
Keep up your work. My slogan is, stop cursing the darkness, light a candle. I'm convinced that you're trying your best to light a candle.
There's wax all over my table.
Thanks again. We'll see you Sunday, and good night, Barry.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Thanks for being on our program. Thank you.
Well, that was exciting, eh, to get a firsthand briefing there from Barry Chamish.
All right, let me give my final salute.
Yes.
To hell with the Queen of England!
Read it yourself instead of asking the government why, because that will cause the propaganda to die. Once again, it's indeed a great honor to have you here, Sherman, with your treasury of wisdom, knowledge, and experience, and we'll look forward to having you back real soon. You're the greatest co-host anyone has ever had. Good night, Sherman.
Good night.
Ton triomphe et notre gloire. But ask yourself, if we'd learned on November 22nd, 1963, that the premier of Russia had been shot from a Moscow office building by a lonely capitalist sympathizer who himself was then liquidated by a patriotic Muscovite within 48 hours while surrounded by armed police, I think it would be pretty apparent to any free-thinking person that a coup d'etat and a transfer of power had just taken place in the Soviet Union. And we would not be asking questions or attacking Jim Garrison or his record. We would, in a free-thinking society, be asking hard questions about why he was killed and what forces were opposed to him.
When the legend becomes fact, print the legend.
What the hell happened to the America that I've known and loved? Right, we sent rockets to photograph the rectal passages of Jupiter, and the kids wind up in porno films. They violate the laws of Newton and Christ, and then we wonder why a bunch of bandits with towels on their heads have got us by the nuts.
Baghdad! Don't underestimate Baghdad!
A city rich in romantic oriental lore.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Baghdad! You must investigate Baghdad!
And learn a few of the facts you never knew before.
You both were members of Skull and Bones, a secret society at Yale. What does that tell us?
Not much, because it's a secret.
Is there a secret handshake? Is there a secret code?
I wish there were something secret I could manifest.
322, a secret number?
There are all kinds of secrets.